I'm still getting used to Lucy being back from her father's, school starting, and regular life resuming. Yesterday I walked outside with her to see her off to school. A young woman, all grown up, was the neighbor's polite way of putting it, on a street on an end of summer day, greeting her friends. Long legs, fledgling feminine shape, all hope and eagerness. Our next door neighbors are moving, and change is in the air. The familiarity of our old house is comforting, even its predictable mess. I was glad I could be home when Lucy returned from school yesterday. She chattered, and I listened and admired. She's still snuggling in an awkward way, head first, less body contact. Her eyes are nearly level with mine, and she's filled out. But, quote, nobody likes her. And she says that the eighth grade will be just as bad as the seventh. A feeding frenzy of sharp-toothed girls pulling at flesh and drawing blood. The eclipse of spontaneous childlike behavior and its rigid substitute, the obligatory expressions, movements, dress, and opinions imposed on everyone who's a teenager. She was very blue yesterday over eighth grade social non-life, rejection, competition, jealousy. She'd been to a dance Saturday and a sleepover. Everyone likes one certain girl. Boys called to ask out everyone but Lucy. Junior high is torture, a constant gnawing at your self-esteem, lots of homework, pimples. Lucy's nose looks like it's been blistered. I've come to visit Matt and his girlfriend in their sweet first home together in Madison, Wisconsin. Cozy cats and a cozy young man and woman. Table set for two. Everything clean and orderly and stocked up. Matt shows me his sock drawer, each pair rolled neatly. What a difference from when Lucy and I visited him back when he was sharing an apartment with two male roommates. Lucy and I had recoiled from sleeping in his six-week-old sheets. Sleeping in the same bed with Lucy anyway is like sleeping with a hamster out of its cage. And his cats were talking all night. The bathtub was black with grime, and because only men lived there, the toilet seat, if down, was wet. Matt thought I was being a prima donna to want clean sheets. No one slept in them for 4 weeks, and before that they were only used 2 weeks, he said. But now, everything is clean, and he set up the bathroom lights so that when you turn it on, the radio goes on too. The kittens have a basket with a blanket in it. Mama Cat has a favorite cushion. A neighbor across the way hangs a pot of pink and white impatience in her window. Matt tells me sunset is his favorite time. A spot of floor is lit by the sun, and the mama cat likes to sit and blink in it. He's arranged a toy ball on a string hanging from a hook in the ceiling. Just 22, Matt and his gentle girlfriend, I like her so much, are like their kittens in their basket, except that they face, now that they've graduated, figuring out what to do in life, where to live, and soon separation from each other. I can't remember being able to part as they contemplate doing. For me, parting has always been so difficult and painful. I'm like the mama cat who sits blinking in the spot of sun, not wanting it to fade. I'm here as a middle-aged mother with another kitten already half-grown at home. It helps to see my grown child, to see what can happen after you let go. Sitting across from Matt at his pleasant table for two by the windows, I thought, here he is, bobbing along high in the open sea, and the little harbor of home is practically out of sight. And I'm bobbing, too. We drove earlier through the fancier neighborhood higher up, overlooking the lake, then walked past the house he lived in earlier with roommates, and around to State Street, down it and back, to play with the kitties, watch the sun fade, and, for me, to write this. Lucy is moody and difficult lately. She says it's me. I think it's her. It seems such a long time since I helped her dry her back after a shower, though she still sometimes asks me to tickle her back and tuck her in. She's more likely to tuck me in, as I nearly always am in bed before she is. I see how little time Ben and I have left with her as belonging with us. so securely a part of our threesome. A mother's eyes are always looking into the past, but Lucy looks at herself in the mirror, dreaming of her future, trying to look through her present self to the young woman she's becoming. She plopped on our bed last night, us, middle-aged lovers hungry for privacy, and wanted something, but it all went wrong, and her valley girl accenting of words made me cross. Her recital of the video she and her friend made, which I'd already told her I'd watched, so especially didn't need it repeated, made me cross. So that I hurt her feelings, and this drove her out, which gave us privacy, but I didn't want it at the price of her feelings. As she went out, she said, justifiably, "Whatever I say is wrong." 46-year-olds are just in another realm of interest and conversation from nearly 14-year-olds. How fast it all goes. I see ahead sometimes to no child at home, to her as a young woman, to my own old age. My mother got very sick when she was only 53 and died just before she was 64. I don't know what being healthy and happy when you're old looks like. But I'm not my mother, and what happened to her, what she did to herself, is not fated for me. I can make, I have made, different choices. We went to a Peruvian restaurant with friends and their 2.5-year-old daughter, who was very charming. Next to me was my once-upon-a-time 2.5-year-old, long-legged Lucy, still putting her head on my shoulder, but nearly gone from childhood. I should prepare her with some pads to carry in her backpack, as she could start her period any day. Yesterday, I drove Lucy and her friends to the movies, where she was to meet a boy, half her size, a race of mini-men, far from the grown men who now glance at Lucy on the street. Some don't stare, others do. "I could consider this my first date," she said, and I, leaving her at the movies, was near tears, as it seems I often am these days. And last night she said this mini-man had asked her to go with him. She was very pleased, thrilled, really, at reaching a sort of milestone. Lucy's 14th birthday. She made a card for me, drew a tree with a heart as its fruit, and wrote, "Dearest Mother, thank you for giving me life and letting me have this 14th spring." I'm on the back stoop at the cottage in Ellison Bay. I told Ben yesterday, after reading over my diaries, I have the same themes over and over. Love Ben. It's hard being a mother. Happy love. Upset with Ben. My mother, headache, worries about children, can't write, can write, work, worries about money, sweets, and all other. "Which theme are you going to write about today?" he asked. "Love, Ben, happy love, and headache gone," I said. Ben, Lucy, and I watched a National Geographic special about a bizarre South American bird. Seeing all the astounding variety, intricacy, and adaptations of creatures, I think, could it all be an accident? Yet also how cruel nature is. That sloth, the world's creepiest creature, being killed by a harpy eagle. Is it so different from whoever that predator was on the highway, murdering the young woman who'd been driving alone and had to pull over? Except the eagle at least fed the sloth to its young, and that murderer killed for perverse pleasure. Predators can pluck you right off a tree where you're sitting blinking your eyes in the sun. And for myself, even in Ellison Bay, I've turned back, out for an afternoon walk past the Griffin Inn because of the appearance of a man I've seen before walking, that man with a ghostly face. It is a miracle I haven't smoked in 2.5 years. I have a stray impulse this morning, and it makes me realize what torture it always was to resist the urge. It is as if you're being pulled by something that's tugging at you, but invisible to others. What a blessing, how blessed to not have that tugging at me day and night, to have even almost forgotten what it was like, and to sit in clean air with a calm heart and clear lungs, drinking coffee. Last night after dinner, I took a shower before we were going to get cherry pie. Ben went for a walk in the dark and returned, saying he'd been to the end of the dock, and it was sublime. So the two of us returned down Cedar Road. It was pitch black as soon as we walked past the streetlight. I was frightened nearly off balance by how dark it was. Then through a path opening through the trees, I saw the stars like a meadow of wildflowers. All the people staying in the three or four houses there are gone, so there were no lights on and no moon. Only a single boat tied at the dock and a family's voices coming over the water. We went to the end of the dock and Ben pointed out Cassiopeia. This morning there's a winter storm warning, near blizzard conditions and dangerous cold. I'll be glad I can pick Lucy up from school, and I'm feeling happy to be able to be an at-home mother today. Yesterday when she brought a friend home with her, I made muffins and tea. Late in the day, at near dark, I went to the dry cleaners and the public library. I've seldom been at those places at that time of day because of work. But now that I don't have to go to a daily job, I'm so glad I can work at home and part-time in my therapy office. I came back from the library with a little stack of books. Ben gave me a beautiful leather weight to hold my books open. It has my initials on it. On Christmas Eve, on a television in a little one-story motel called the Silver Saddle in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Ben and I are watching the Pope say Mass. We drove through the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, had dinner in a restaurant that had a crackling fireplace. For the first time ever, I'm having the holiday away from Matt and Lucy, who are at their father's. The Pope, nobody's father, kisses some children. We walked up Canyon Road last night, the road on both sides illuminated by farolitas, those candles inside brown paper bags. The air was very cold, very fresh. It felt like an intensified Halloween night, lots of people out with babies, dogs. Canyon Road has many art galleries, which were formerly houses, wonderful houses. But nobody lives there now, and no one seems to live downtown. Where are the real people? Downtown is like a Western stage set. Many people seem like actors, dressed in sombreros and fur coats and expensive silver jewelry. It's unsavory, rich white people wearing Indian or Spanish clothing like costumes, when the real people live in poverty. We went to the little adobe sanctuary at Chimayo yesterday, a kind of healing shrine. It has several small rooms off the main one and a basin of holy dirt. The walls are hung with icons, rosaries, and milagros, the little tin amulets representing the part of the body that needs healing, a leg, a knee, a heart, and photographs of children, which were healed, which died. A faded and nearly unreadable photocopy of a photograph of a wild-looking man who disappeared several months ago. Hand-lettered praises and poems, full-size crutches, offerings in proof of a healing. I bought two milagros, a tin head, depression, headaches, fatigue, for me, and a tin heart, arrhythmia, for Ben. I lit candles, a big one for my client who has two young children and adenocarcinoma of the lung, for my three-year-old child client, for the babies awaiting adoption and the one nobody wanted, an extra candle for whoever might need a guardian angel. Ben's father left us some money with which we are making this trip in two different places. After Santa Fe, we came to stay a few days in this beautiful old resort in North Carolina, and now, just at this moment, in has come a room service breakfast with a flower, newspaper, tablecloth, and the waiter is pouring my coffee. It's so delicious to be pampered. I'm kind of ashamed of my pleasure in it. But I think of the dying words of someone's friend told to us, "I only regret my economies." It would be great for Ben and me to travel as much as we can in our future. It's lovely to have a friend like him who thinks, as I do, that it's fun to read and write in a public library, who shares the idea that happiness is traveling with a little zipped bag containing paper clips, eraser, tiny stapler, and miniature scissors. He said last night, I'm too happy. I don't like to be so happy. When we were visiting our friends here yesterday, they brought their one-year-old baby just up from his nap into the living room so close to me I could smell his baby smell and feel the heat from his head. His eyes were just at my eye level as I sat there, and it was as though he was Obi-Wan Kenobi's light ray. His energy field was so intense and his life force so strong, it was practically visible. It seemed like a sort of visitation. We ate lunch with our friends, had a long walk and a cool drink on the terrace afterward. Now, back in our room, Ben naps. I feel sad that the sunlight has receded, and tomorrow is our last day, that everything passes, the daylight, a vacation, life. Darkness is coming, and I haven't lit even the smallest lamp against it yet. Instead, I'm sitting at the window, watching the light coming on outside and the world changing. I'm kept awake by my wish to hold back time.